A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
No, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Jack's Grill in the Heights. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Come on, George, on ESPN 97.5, 92.5, broadcasting live from Jack's Grill. So we know that Reggie Jackson said that himself, Craig Biggio, Jeff Bagwell, who else was there? Oh, Jim Crane and Dana Brown. The five of them are kind of your group that is deciding on who is and who is not going to be a member of the Astros. Whether that was them deciding not to bring in Blake Snell, them deciding yes to bring in Josh Hader. Like, there is a collective just group that is making these, you know, these decisions. In a perfect world, how much do you just want ownership involved at all? Any team?
Generally, never. It feels like it always ends poorly, even if there are brief moments of success. Because ultimately, you believe that the successful businessman who has enough money to own the toy is going to play with this toy a little too hard.
And it's hard not to, right? Like, if you had that money and you're the owner of the Texans.
No matter what I say right now, I know that eventually I would meddle. Mm-hmm. I would be just like Jim Crane. I'd look at the little shrine I have to my high school football career, and I'd be like, yeah, I know football.
Yeah. I know what that safety looks like.
I know just as much as, well, imagine Jack Easterby is the guy that starts running everything. I would feel pretty confident knowing that more than Jack Easterby. But no, I think it's all businessmen. You get into this industry and you think it's going to be just as easy to succeed there by sheer will and sheer force. And I think that's why you're learning with David Tepper in Carolina specifically more than any other ownership group. Like, it's not working. If you're too hands-on, it generally doesn't work. You got to hire the right people. There's no doubt about that. But when you got your hands everywhere, when you are one of those people that is a control freak, it's just got to be hard to be successful. Because
yeah.
I think the most successful people have a tough time admitting that there are certain things that they don't know and that they will never know. And it's because of the success that they've had. They are literally a victim of their own success.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance with ownership groups, because if they have success while they do it too, like the Astros have done, it just kind of adds to the fire. And you look at what has happened, is even though, you know, Jim Crane was adamant about re-signing Verlander and then he unfortunately got hurt, the Astros still won another World Series because of that move, because he was willing to do that. You know, he was the reason why he gave the approval for them to go over the luxury tax in, what, 2019 by acquiring Zach Greinke, and they lucked out, I guess, in a way, because the pandemic happened, so they never had to pay that luxury tax on how much money they had on their roster. But most of the moves that they've made, these big moves, have worked for the Astros. That's also where it's like, it's hard to deny what the Astros have done by letting players walk and bringing players in. But now it's just at this point where the Astros organization as a whole might be turning a negative corner. And that's when I don't know if I want an owner meddling. It's one thing to being like, dude, I got all the money in the world. So, like, you can have whoever you want. But I want you to go get this specific player and go get him and continue winning. It's when things go south. I feel like that's when ownership really gets things wrong, because they want to overspend to fix problems when it's like structurally you have problems.
Or overcorrect.
Yeah.
You know, one of the great things about Cal McNair is he's very hands-off. And that can have its drawbacks, as we saw during the Jack Easterby era. But I think one of the other reasons that it feels like Jim Crane's fingerprints are all over everything in the Astros organization, we'll play that Reggie Jackson audio in a bit, where it feels like there's a lot of voices around Jim Crane that are telling him what to do or just giving him their honest thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're Hall of Fame baseball players, do you tell them nah, you're full of it. Nah, let's relax a little bit here.
Yeah.
Really, you just look at the Astros brain trust right now, and supposedly it's Jim Crane, it's Reggie Jackson, it's Jeff Bagwell, I guess Craig Biggio's involved, and I would assume Dana Brown and some of the other guys. Do you feel like the conversations that those groups are having, that the guys who used to play the game are giving Crane the best advice possible? And just
Probably based
entirely off of the general managerless era of Astros baseball, where they gave Rafael Montero a terrible contract. Montero's been good one season in his career. Mm-hmm. Where they gave, on top of that, the contract to Jose Abreu, when a lot of metrics seemed to be indicating that he was on the decline. And then they signed Michael Brantley, where like there's been so many shoulder issues with Michael Brantley, you had to be seriously wondering if he was ever going to play baseball again.
Yeah.
Give him $10 million.
Even though, hey, but Jeff Bagwell said he was going to be ready for opening day.
He did.
And he was not.
And that's what I mean, too. And then these guys, Bagwell and Reggie Jackson, talk. And
they make it worse.
It makes it seem worse than it probably even is.
Yeah. You know, what's funny, too, is because sometimes this stuff works out, right? Like, you call your past players, and there's a positive outcome. And maybe that's why Jim Crane feels so confident in doing this, is because maybe just over the years, even into the Luno era, I doubt it, but since Luno, that these guys have been involved. And moments where they won another World Series, and it was a good thing. I would hope that, like, for example, Cal McNair does not think that just because he called Andre Johnson about getting D'Amico Ryan's approval, that he now thinks that Hall of Famer Andre Johnson has to be involved in every situation. Because if you did that, then Deshaun Watson would still be your quarterback. Now, he would have fired Jack Easterby sooner, but because Andre very clearly did not like him. But it's almost more of like, I wish these owners would just say, hey, like, I don't really care what you think. Like, I don't really need – even Dream. Like, Tillman doesn't need to be going to Dream and Elvin Hayes and these guys for their opinions on Cougs basketball and Rockets basketball. They can help you build new arenas and new jerseys. But, like, they don't need to be involved in day-to-day decisions of – what James Harden or what these guys are going
to
be.
I don't think it's harmful to have other people to ask questions too, but it feels like whatever these guys, I don't know if these guys are asking questions as much as they have ideas.
Yeah.
Like I think it's smart to bounce ideas off of people often if you're in a decision maker role, and specifically people who know more about things than you. And maybe in a way that's what Jim Crane thinks he's doing here. Mm-hmm. But I think the track record of late is in front of us looking messy.
I honestly, like, I know they play at their Hall of Famers, but I don't think they always know that much more than we do. Like, they know what worked for them. They know what it meant to be a great baseball player. Just because you know what it means to be a Hall of Fame baseball player doesn't mean you know. We talked about this earlier with, like, being coaches. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you can identify and
– Right, and it's like you think you have the sight. And sometimes – baseball is a sport now where – as much as players, and especially old ex-players, get frustrated about the term analytics, there are a lot of statistics, a lot of data points that you can look at to determine what a player's good at, what a player's bad at, mm-hmm. perhaps in baseball more than in any other sport, from hitting to fielding to pitching. There's so many things out there that determine what makes a player good. And to baseball's credit, like, they've done, I think, the best job of you know, figuring out ways to look at numbers, to look at metrics, and to turn that into wins. And that's how you see these mm-hmm. bare-bone operations like the A's or the Rays winning a ton of games despite not having a lot of cash. They found very creative ways to make things happen. So I don't think that the players that used to play that are Hall of Famers are looking at those things as much as they are trusting their eyeballs and their instincts and their intuition to tell them that one player is better than another. And that's where it gets frustrating, because let's just be honest. If you are a great ex-player, are you going to put in the work to studying the metrics,
it's not the, same.
The tape?
Yeah.
I just have a hard time buying into anybody doing it. And I'm not even faulting them for it. Like, why would you think that you need to do any of those things? But I do think that today's game, with things as competitive as they are, you have to have that as a part of your evaluation, no matter how great your sight or knowledge of ball is.
And I might feel better about them being involved if, like, every single time that an older baseball player, like, talks, it's not just, like, old man yells at Cloud about analytics. Because, like, the tone in which, like, Bagwell and these guys and Reggie Jackson
It's very dismissive.
It's very dismissive. And it's not that – look, and, like, and this is a sport that it's, analytics also ruined their sport. So, cause
I agree. They made it boring. Three results. Yeah, like strikeout, walk, home run.
Yeah, that's why Theo Epstein joined the commissioner's office, because he realized he took it too far, and that's why they added the pitch clock, and they're doing all these extreme things to try to make the game enjoyable again. But to be completely dismissive of it is not great either. So it is what it is. But you know what? I wonder what the analytics would tell you about lineups and how lineups work. And you know what, Pumpkin? Because that's the word that he likes to use, because he's a clown. And please invite him onto our show sometime, Paul, because I would love to talk to Jeremy Booth. But he thinks you Astros fans are pumpkins. And we'll tell you why he's next.
Back to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Jack's Grill in the Heights.
Broadcasting live from Jack's Grill and Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Quickly becoming my favorite person in sports media is very clearly Jeremy Booth.
Who you called a clown this week.
Yeah, I'll do it again. I think my biggest frustration now is just with Jason Bristol. Like, I know you want clicks, but, like, can you stop, like, putting
Joe,
them on?
Joe, I'm a regular on Sports Extra, and if you cut into my TV time,
no, I'm
I will
saying.
Cut you.
Like, I really like Jason. I just wish
you
would not.
It's not like you like him that much.
No, I just wish he wouldn't put Jeremy Booth on the air.
The game is the game.
No, it is the game.
And Jeremy Booth knows ball. Jeremy Booth, what he's been saying, TL didn't listen, TL didn't watch. What Jeremy Booth has been saying is that with Yordan Alvarez in the two spot, the Astros aren't going to have a parade. And guess what? With Yordan Alvarez in the two spot, what's the Astros' record?
4-10.
Okay, Joe.
I know.
Scoreboard.
Yeah, I guess.
There's been 14 scoreboards this year. And 10 of them, the Astros have had less runs than the other team. And on four, they've had more.
What about the – let's play the audio first. here is –
Because he's doubling down.
He is very much doubling down.
And I like it.
Oh, I do too.
This is hot take culture, baby.
And I really do want him on. I wish he lived in Houston so we could have him in studio. It'd be way more fun. But we're gonna
ask. Do you want me to ask him on?
Yeah,
I have his number.
Yeah, I want.
We text every now and then.
Yeah, I want to.
Okay,
I want to have.
Do you want me to tell him that you called him a clown, or should we keep it on the DL? Because obviously he's on the radio now, so now everyone knows.
Yeah, I don't care. all right. So here is Jeremy Booth and his podcast with Jason Bristol. Talking about the lineup construction and what you should do if you don't like it.
If you don't like what I do and you still watch everything I do, you're still a fan. You're still a fan, buddy. Okay? If you think what I'm saying isn't relevant, then shut it. Go watch something else. If you think what I'm saying is wrong, you're entitled to your opinion. Nothing you say to me is going to bother me. I literally sit there and I laugh about how asinine some of these responses are. And when the Astros have 10, 12, 14 hits and they get three runs, if you can't realize that's a problem in lineup construction, if you can't realize your manager, their manager, is trying to find the way to get Yordan Alvarez and Tucker and Kyle Tucker as many opportunities to drive in runs as possible, then you never need to watch the game again, Pumpkin, okay? Go do something else.
I love the pumpkin.
Because that's what they want to do. Go watch basketball. Go watch hockey. Go watch soccer. I know. Go do some math.
So
he didn't disparage football there, so I like him even more.
He knows. He knows not to disparage football. This is my – I have some fundamental – and this is why I didn't want to talk to him. Because I'm curious what his response to facts are. Right, he wants to point out the fact that the Houston Astros have 10-14 hits in a game and they score no runs. And he wants to blame Joe Espada, clearly, because he has a huge issue. If it's not clear, he is upset that Dusty Baker is not here. That was really the first time that Jeremy Booth became relevant in this city was last year, because he's really not, to be honest. The first time like we knew who Jeremy Booth really was when he put out the Dusty Baker, why would you want to come to this city, or why would anyone want to manage here, because the fans suck. And he makes that clear in this comment when he says, your manager, Joe Espada. So he does not like the fact that Dusty Baker's gone. My issue with his argument is that it's so wrong and flawed. Is that all he could do is tell you how great Dusty Baker was and how wrong Joe Espada's lineup is because the analytics have Yordan Alvarez batting second. But the facts are is that when Dusty Baker was the manager and Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker batted lower in the lineup, they scored zero runs when it mattered, basically. It got smoked at the end of last season at home constantly. When they couldn't beat the Royals, when they couldn't beat the A's, when they couldn't beat the Rangers. So, like, this idea that us pumpkins, because I'm gonna put myself in this category, don't know ball, and Jeremy Booth does because he's like a minor league baseball player, it's crazy. Like, Dusty Baker.
Former baseball tech.
Like, Dusty Baker ran a different lineup and it didn't work. That's why
Except for 2022 when he won 106 games.
But it's the problem from last year.
When they won 90 games in the AL West?
When they got smoked at the end of the season?
In the ALCS? The series that went to seven?
I understand. But these problems started in October and September last year. And they blamed a batter's eye. So, like, the idea that, like, now putting Yordan Alvarez second has changed everything so dramatically when the offense was terrible last year, the last month and a half. It's such a wrong argument.
But here's where he's right.
Where? Because they don't win.
He has the trump card no matter what.
I don't think he does.
He does. They have a 29 winning percentage this year.
Yeah.
Dusty Baker in 2020, 483. In 2021, 586. In 2022, 654. In 2023, 556. With a different lineup. And yes, it's a bad faith argument, and that's why it's so delicious.
Well, because
I love it because it makes the baseball nerds so angry. It really gets them frustrated. So I'm going to side with Jeremy Booth on this.
But he's wrong.
No, he's not wrong because the final score is all that matters. Stats are for losers, final scores for winners.
But the final scores tell you last year that the lineup didn't matter either. Like, the lineup is. This is like, and like, what's so clear, too, and like what I don't understand is why it's so focused on Espada when it's the players. It's the same as the, like, that's to me is why he's no different than the text line.
But.
Because the text line is saying fire Espada for what?
To Jeremy's point, there was way too much backlash against Dusty Baker last year.
Oh, that I don't disagree
with. It was over the top. And I mean, he probably went a little bit too far saying someone's not going to take the job of a team that's been to the ALCS 6 years in a row because of the way that the fan base talks online. Every fan base has a vocal minority that's insufferable. Every single fan base. Welcome to 2024. You got to get used to it. Maybe Dusty Baker shouldn't have been so sensitive. But at the same time, they were winning, and they were calling him basically every single word except for the R word. They may have well just called him that. They all thought he was stupid and incompetent, and I thought it was over the top. I mean, there are decisions I disagreed with, but that's why I started being like, hey, can we relax with this a little bit? So this year, I agree. You can't put this all on Joe Espada. They're not getting hits with runners in scoring position. They don't have enough depth. What is Joe Espada supposed to do with the starting pitchers that they have right now? What's he supposed to do with the middle relief that they have right now? This is an uphill battle. I think Jeremy's focusing on this one thing, and he thinks that if you had Yordan Alvarez in a different spot in the lineup, things might be different. Here's the thing. It might be. But I'm not going to say this is the reason that they're having such a slow start. But things theoretically could be different with him in a different spot because we don't know. We aren't in that parallel universe right now. So, again, it's some of this argument is in bad faith, 100%.
Yeah.
But the reason he's pushing back is because a lot of the same people that believe that they know more ball than a manager of a baseball team that, took a while to win his first World Series. It's that same energy, and that's why he's kind of pushing back against it. It might be a war of pettiness that honestly has no winners at the end of the day.
That's really what it is, too. He seems like he knows some baseball, obviously. And I actually would like to hear what his actual thoughts are on some of this stuff. If it wasn't so clearly driven in pettiness or anger, whatever it is. Because, like, that's where it's like when he talks, he's just attacking Astros Twitter, right? Like, he's upset that they ran Dusty out, which in reality he's probably upset with Chandler and the Chaz McCormick story. It's probably just like that's really what it was about, because that's what Dusty Baker was upset about last year. Like he kind of made that clear, that when he talked about what had gotten out of the clubhouse to the media. But it's just, it's hard to look at last year and this idea that the lineup construction is the problem now and you should go watch something else, when last year Yordan Alvarez was batting cleanup when they lost 2 out of 3 to Oakland, and then they lost 2 out of 3 to Kansas City, and then they lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore, and then lost 3 straight games to Kansas City. And like that stretch was this lineup that if Jeremy comes on, I'm going to imagine he's going to tell me and tell us that that's how he would fix it. Because what else is the solution? Now, if he's got something real creative, I'll hear it. But, like, the solution is to go back to what worked last year, which, in my opinion, didn't work. It failed. So, like, that's why it's clearly a personal issue that he has that Dusty Baker is not here, and it's a totally bad faith argument. That's why I don't like it.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is at this point. I don't know that it's about what is and what isn't as much as it's F these people.
Yeah.
I'm going to fight fire with fire. Now, that's not going to win any fans over, and that's obviously going to turn a lot of people out, and I think there are a lot of people that are kind of annoyed with what Jeremy Booth has to say.
Yeah.
But since I don't really enjoy a lot of these people, I kind of like siding with Jeremy Booth.
I understand.
I'm an agent of chaos, if anything, you know?
Yeah.
As some are pointing out on the Twitch, I'll admit, like, I know what I know that I don't know much about baseball. However, at the same time, I feel like taking a look at this and saying that all solutions are wrong, like this what Jeremy's like is proposing, could actually maybe result in more runs. It might. I mean,
I'll hear that too.
If you say Yordan Alvarez is batting third or fourth with some of the big hits he's had this year, are there more runs?
I'm now at this point, it's so bad.
I
would like them to change the lineup.
I get the idea of having a guy bat as many times as possible. It's like the new way of doing it, the first and second. But at the same time, too, if you get guys on base, you want guys who are you can rely on to knock runs in.
And the ball's going to find you. I mean, look what happened with Jose Abreu. They moved him to eighth in the order, and what happens the first time he comes out? There's runners on first and third with one out. So it's like the bad luck, the stuff you want to change in baseball, it's going to find you anyways. Whether Yordan Alvarez bats second or fourth is really not going to change it. And my other issue with my last issue with this is that the bottom of the order has been pretty good, so Yordan Alvarez has had like plenty of opportunity to get guys home. So that's one of the things that my issue with it is.
If I can't just point out the numbers, because it seems to me that Jeremy Booth's main argument is Yordan's not in a spot to drive in runs, right? Last 2 years, 2022, 2023, Yordan drives in 97 runs each year. This year, on pace, guy, I know, it's on pace and it's April, but he's on pace to drive in over 130. So the argument kind of falls apart right there. Like, his opportunity to drive in runs has not diminished or decreased at all.
Yeah, but the Astros are, you know, every night with runners in scoring positions. So, like, it's fairy tale land. From the 8-3-2, they literally got to game 7 of the ALCS last year. How can you say that's a failure? I didn't say that was a failure. I said that the lineup's been a failure since September, because it was. We all saw it when they start, or I guess October, when they got swept by the Yankees. The offense was a disaster. I mean, like, they got lucky to win the division last year. Thankfully, they won 4 straight games versus Arizona to make the playoffs, basically.
Guess who I just got a text from?
Jeremy?
I did.
Is he coming on or is he listening?
He is not listening, but he says, hearing him a topic appreciates me, baseball mind Paul Gallant, educating people. Jeremy Booth and Paul Gallant, the unholy baseball alliance that'll drive all Astros fans crazy. Yeah, we'll have him on.
Yeah.
We're going to set this up.
If he does live in Houston, I'd rather it be in studio.
I'm just gonna
I don't know if he does, though.
I'm just going to say I'm going to throw fuel on the fire. I'm going to provide absolutely nothing in this conversation. I'm just going to throw gasoline on the fire and then perhaps, I don't know, what's more flammable than gasoline?
I don't know.
Pendleton whiskey? Just kidding. Pendleton whiskey is amazing.
Pendleton with gasoline.
Yeah, that's drinkable gasoline.
Yeah,
Pendleton's so good it'll make gasoline taste good.
That's not true. You need to take that back. I would reverse course on that.
No, man. You don't understand. You know, some of us have real strong livers.
All right. What is the biggest need for the Houston Texans in the NFL draft? It's only 2 weeks away. We'll have a draft show on Friday night that week when the Texans will have three picks. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Jack's Grill in the Heights. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from Jack's Grill. 2 weeks from today, location TBD. A bunch of us will be doing a live draft show from 6 to 9 p.m. Nice. As the Houston Texans are on the clock three times that night. 42, 59, and 110, I think is what it is. So the Texans have three picks tonight, or in 2 weeks from tonight. What do you think is like their number one – what's the number one need this team needs?
Safety.
Safety?
You know, I could think of a guy could find late. 5'11", 183, a little pasty. Devilishly handsome. Can grow a beard. Does that mean he can play center field in the NFL? I don't know. Many people are asking the question. I'm just asking the question. So they're looking for a 35-year-old safety. I know a guy. But I would say as far as actual needs.
What about a 32-year-old safety? How old is Quandre?
Quandre Diggs?
Yeah.
That is a good question. I think Quandre Diggs is – I think he's 30 or 31.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like them to sign Quandre Diggs. I think for the actual Texas needs that they would address in the draft, because you're looking for guys with upside, I'm saying best player available. I don't think they should lock themselves into any specific player with pick number 42, because you really have no idea who's going to fall that far. But I will be happy if they go after, one, an interior offensive lineman, two, an interior defensive lineman. I feel like you always should be drafting guys at those positions. And on top of that, you need a running back. I think that with – I don't think the Damian Pierce era is over. I want to give him another shot next year. But I kind of understand why he might not be a fit in this system. He might be a better fit elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then I think you're looking at cornerback. Can you find a guy that can get in day one at cornerback in that 42nd spot? I'm not really sure. Safety might be a better, you know, target area for that point in the draft. But for me, in actual order of what they need, safety, because they don't have a guy who can play center field.
Mm-hmm.
Second corner, sorry, I don't trust C.J. Henderson or Jeff Okuda. And then after that, I just want interior depth.
How do you feel at the linebacker position? Because I've seen the name Edgerrin Cooper, he's the linebacker from Texas A&M, as being like a guy that's very popular to talk about. I'm looking at a mock draft right now for some reason. That's seven rounds, and they have him going to the Texans. I don't know when I know they have El Shaair. You have Christian Harris. You have Henry Toto. I don't know if I look at the linebacker position as – to your point of best available and biggest need as the top of my list.
It's 2024. You are generally playing with two linebackers on the field as it is.
Yeah.
So I do not think it should be a massive priority linebacker. Obviously, you want to have a guy who can cover tight ends a little bit better than the Texans have. Well,
Al Shaair?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, I truly don't know. We'll see. I think more so you want to have guys that can play in that – kind of like hybrid, big nickel role where you're a slot corner, but more so you're like a faster player in the box that can help out with tight ends and also good in run support. Desmond King is back. The guy that you just brought in from the Patriots, Miles Bryan, I think like kind of classifies more as a guy like that. So you have other guys that you can theoretically throw out there. Jimmy Ward might be better in that spot. Like the last time we saw from him in San Francisco, he was playing there. And then with the Texans, he was obviously hurt most of the year. But
you can use him in the box more and bring a different safety and have other options.
You have a couple of guys that can play the box. You just don't have a guy who can play at the top.
Yeah, linebacker is just one that I would be – like I'm not going to be mad about whatever Nick Cassero does. Like we talked about this last week. At some point, Texans fans need to just like figure out who they want to be as Nick Cassero believers. Do you want to be a team Cassario or a team not? Like the flip-flopping that's been happening with Cassario, and every time he makes a move, some people love it, some people hate it. Like we saw it really amplified within the Diggs deal. At this point, I believe in Nick Cassario. I have no reason not to. You know, in the draft, he's had a great track record. Yes, Kenyon Green is not good, but everything else is very positive. The only other player you'd be like, that didn't work out, would be Mechie, and that's not his fault. Like, that has nothing to do with Nick Caserio. So if they draft a linebacker, okay. Like, I don't get it, but I trust Nick Caserio at this point. Like, I also don't believe in draft grades. I think it's the stupidest thing we do on the planet. That's the number one dumbest thing we do.
You make me so happy. Well, I mean, it's not the one dumbest thing.
How do you grade a draft the day after?
Also, how do you grade a draft but everyone gets a B or above?
Well, I guess that's kind of why I am. Yes, that's why there's an issue with it.
Because people think that B is satisfactory now. When did that happen?
No, but like a B.
Gen Z, you guys.
If you grade an NFL draft.
Trophy generation.
And you give someone a B, it's really like an F at this point. Because it's like if you give someone a B, it means it's probably not good. Like you rarely ever do it. So the running back point, the one thing I think that's like that's what you're looking at in the third round. Just listening to Daniel Jeremiah talk mostly, and Lance and Bucky Brooks, they keep talking about how all these running backs are kind of the same, like grade wise, and most teams are like don't really know who the top guy is, so they're probably going to fall in the draft. So running back is one that I would expect the Texans to add in the draft this year, and because it seems like they're going to really slide. So
yeah,
I'm very pro adding running back.
I think you're right. There's always guys that we see turn into real players that are found in the middle of the draft. Are you betting on yourself to find that guy, especially after you did find a guy like that not too long ago in Damian Pierce? Odds are probably against you, but there are always going to be running backs available in the draft. And right now, yeah, you have one that you trust, and that's before he's even played a snap for you with Joe Mixon.
And the more I think about it,
I don't get that extension still.
No, I don't either.
Let him play first.
Well, that's probably the most confusing part of the Texans roster is the running back room. You gave an extension to Joe Mixon when you didn't need to. You haven't brought in a third running back. And you have Damian Pierce, who was relegated to kick return last year.
He was a good kick returner, though.
He was. I look forward to Damian Pierce.
You might have the best kick returning game in the NFL right now because Steven Sims had the punt return touchdown.
Yeah.
And on the kickoff return, Damian Pierce returned it for a touchdown. And I don't know if you're going to throw Andrew Beck there.
He's
got a kick return touchdown.
Players make plays.
Texans got the best special teams
in the NFL. What's this weird kid everyone's talking about who was with the Texans players the other day? What does he say?
Oh, Stitch.
What's his thing? Special teams. Special teams, special players, special
players.
I hate that you know that. Everyone's doing it. They did it. It's super viral on TikTok right now.
I want to light him up.
Special teams,
goes over
players.
The middle, running the route like that.
I mean, like, I don't see why not. Like,
why are they all pandering to this kid? He's faking autism.
Apparently he's super
popular. I looked it up.
No.
He admitted to it.
No, he admitted to faking it.
He admitted to it.
Yeah,
he admitted it as part of his character. It's nuts.
All right.
Stolen valor.
Stolen valor.
It's crazy.
Any other draft thoughts?
I can't believe he admitted to it and he hasn't been canceled yet.
Well, you can't really cancel people anymore.
Oh, wow. Easy. Woke Joe over here.
Oh, I think it's hard to cancel people now. I think we've in a very positive way, have reversed course on how quickly we cancel people. Now people get canceled for real things. Vince McMahon, canceled. Well deserved.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson, kind of canceled. Pretty well deserved. I think people, the canceling has become more deserved now than in the past. So I think we're okay. Now this kid probably should be canceled, but not.
I think it's crazy that he admitted to it. I looked this up online because I was like, okay. I figured when I saw this, I was like, okay, he must be special needs or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah. And again, nothing wrong with that. And good for him. He's making a name for himself. But it's a character. It's bizarre.
All right, when we get back, garbage time as we wrap up our show this week. Broadcasting live from Jack's Grill, it's Glanton George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
First, let me tell you about the Highway Cantina, 975. Tall Tex and Margaritas at the Highway Cantina. Guys, it's the best spot in downtown. It is the best spot there is. Honestly, better than the baseball park. Because that team, they don't win. But hey, if you want to get yourself a affordable margarita, thanks Biden, at a restaurant before you go into the ballpark, I know where to find it. It's at the Highway Cantina. It's on St. Emmanuel. It's within walking distance of the baseball stadium, the basketball arena, the soccer stadium as well. And on top of that, the Highway Cantina, we got really good food. Wood-fired oysters, mesquite sausage, some of the best chicken fajitas I've ever had. Looking for a happy hour this afternoon to wrap up your Friday? You could join us here. You could also go to the Highway Cantina if you're in downtown. Looking to impress the boss. Highway Cantina. Check it out on St. Emmanuel and tell him Paul Gallant sent you.
Hide.
You're listening to Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Jack's Grill in the Heights.
Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. False start. Flag on the play. Brian McDonald. 10-yard penalty.
Throw a flag on that train.
What train? Oh, yeah.
Joel just gave you the dirtiest look. Joel's going to tell you all about it on the Killer Bees, I'm sure.
Joel's had the worst luck the last two days. Supposedly, Joel Blank had to go under a train or over a train to get here. He got stuck. That's why he got here 5 minutes before the start of the show.
So Joel's just had the worst luck with train crossings the last 2 days, right before the start of a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At East River 9, there's a train
that stops for literally hours.
I've been to that place 3 times, and I have been stopped by that train. And it's like, that's the only drawback of that place is like this train from hell that comes out of nowhere and blocks you. So I guess down the road, there's a train that was blocking this Joel. He's like at the finish line. He's right next to Jax, and he had to park in a parking lot. And I guess he went through a couple of boxcars. I'm glad the train didn't start moving when he went through. That would have been a little bit terrifying.
But
Joel just went full hobo. I like it.
He went full hobo.
I'm sorry if I'm disparaging any hobos out there. If you're jumping on a train with a little handkerchief on a stick, carrying all your belongings.
All right.
How does that work?
That's a good question. All right. Let's get to garbage time to wrap up the week.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
So I was telling you guys about some things that I've watched. I watched the Civil War movie last night. I thought it was pretty good. I also watched the first couple episodes of the new Amazon series Fallout, based off of the video game, a video game that I have been obsessed with. It delivered. It is very, very awesome. And talking with a friend who is also an addict of that game, he too believes it's the most accurate representation possible that we've ever seen of a video game turned into a movie or into a TV show. But there's another TV show on Netflix. I just saw an article about this. It is the number one show on Netflix. It's called Unlocked, a jail experiment. It takes place at the Pulaski County Detention Facility in Arkansas. Basically, there's a 6-week program where detainees who were in jail before this for 23 hours a day with 1 hour outside, they're now in an open prison concept that revolves around the radical idea of no locks and no officers, with 19 high-definition cameras to catch all the action. I gotta say,
I'm intrigued.
I'm surprised this show hasn't been made already. I mean, this seems like something that should have happened already in a sort of mocking form, a parody or satire form on some TV show, like on 30 Rock.
Sure.
This would have been a potential show that was proposed by NBC. This is happening in real life, and it is the number one show on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm curious. There's also a new Netflix is really like going to the reality TV show game. They just launched a new show where, like, a bunch of their characters from whatever, like, the Love Island or whatever stuff is, like, Netflix priority. Uh-huh. Taylor Lewan is apparently hosting a new challenge-based reality TV show in Mexico that all these people are going to be on. Did you watch Squid Game?
I did watch Squid Game. I know they made the fake game show version.
You didn't watch that?
No, because no one's dying.
It was interesting, though.
No offense.
The competitions were good. There was too many characters to follow. Like, because, like, you would get, like, get invested in someone, and then they would die.
See, that's a lot of TV shows these days, like that Halo television abomination that's on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, it's not on my list.
We did discuss this earlier, but it's a sad day for love. The Golden Bachelor got divorced after 3 months.
Man.
He thought he had finally found love. He was running out of options. I hope that's not me someday. But
he's old.
Worse, Tennessee passed a bill banning first cousins getting married.
Damn.
Shout out to all our Titans fans out there who have married their cousins, Tennessee Volunteers fans as well. I guess you got to annul it now.
Yeah, I was watching a podcast the other day. There's these Titans fans on there.
Okay.
On the locker room. And those guys definitely look like people who marry their cousins who are on that show. That's all I know.
What does that mean?
They just look like it.
Well, what's wrong with marrying your cousin, Joe?
I don't know.
I don't know. That's probably illegal.
Feels like a bad idea.
It feels like a bad idea.
Like, things that are not a good idea. Marry your cousins.
Oh,
that reminds me. There's this TikTok person who, and like Twitter and Instagram and stuff, they've been going to the University of Alabama, and like that's how they start there.
Yeah.
Like, they go to all these drunk kids, and they're like, what do you think about marrying your cousin? And most of the time, like, they're gross. But then you see, like,
there's always one person who is
he's a little hesitant because he knows he's got some weird feelings.
He probably, so actually, in the first episode of Fallout, which I saw last night.
Marries a cousin.
No, but they're trapped in a vault together underground after a nuclear apocalypse has just happened. Mm. And this one guy confesses to the main character of the show, I love you. And she goes up to him and pats him on the shoulder and says, yeah, but we're first cousins. This wouldn't work. Sorry.
Man, but see, that's where I feel like. You know,
bring it a full circle here.
Fallout. Can't wait to watch it. I'm going to watch it this weekend.
Also,
you know what?
What's that?
I don't watch Dune 2 this weekend, I need some kind of. You can punish me somehow. Just yell at me.
I'm not going to put pressure on you to watch it. You watch it when you feel like it.
I need to watch it.
You don't need to watch it.
Well,
but it's
I do.
Good.
But you know what?
It's a good movie.
But you know what? You know what the good thing about the Astros right now?
You can watch that instead.
They suck so bad I can watch Dune 2 this weekend.
You should do it instead.
Can't wait. All right.
There we go.
The Silver Boot series continues. And you know what?
Hey, it's split.
It's split.
It is 2-2.
It's still on the table. It's still early in the season.
The problem is now they're playing the games at Minute Maid Park.
Great.
Where the Astros can't hit.
All right. Just a reminder, we are live here at Jack's Grill. The Killer Bees will be here until 6 o'clock. And you know what? Joel Blank loves you so much, he committed an illegal act to get here. They'll discuss that next
he
and more. It is an illegal act, to be clear, but he is a champion.
He hijacked a train.
All right, talk to you Monday. Goodbye.
Peace. Then you never need to watch the game again, pumpkin, okay?